Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, Janine Vosper here, and welcome to another episode of the We Are Women podcast. With me today, I have Sufit. Now, Sufit, I met, well, online. I actually bought her books, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. And then we met online, had a chat about a year or so ago. And so I'm really pleased to have her with me today. Welcome to the show, Sufit.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
And now let me tell you a little bit about her. Now, Sufit featured in Forbes and Just let me explain something before I start. Look, I'm putting a little proviso on this. For me, it's 5 o'clock in the morning because Sufit is in Toronto and it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon for her. So if you find me stumbling over my words today, it might take me about 15 minutes to wake up fully. So ladies and gentlemen who listen, please just have a little bit of patience if you find that the words just aren't coming out as clearly as they usually do.
Janine is being a wonderful host. She made it at a time that's perfectly convenient for me. And I didn't read the fine print on her note, which said, yeah, it's 5 a.m. for her. So at like 4:30 for her, I'm bugging her. But anyway, you're gonna enjoy today.
Yeah, no, it's good. And for those that know me personally know that I am an early morning person, but it's usually to exercise and not get the brain into gear. So we'll see how we go. So let me tell you a little bit about Sufit. Now, she featured in Forbes and Entrepreneur magazine, and she is an award-winning book, which is Step Into the Spotlight, A Guide to Getting Noticed. And that's the book that I originally purchased. Now, Sufit is a former lawyer who has been described by the Toronto Star as a starburst of energy, bright, bubbly, and upbeat, and by a published weekly as a coaching dynamo. Now, her book, Step Into the Spotlight, has been endorsed by Tom Peters, Jay Conrad, Leveson, Jack Trout, BNI founder, Ivan Misner, Les Brown, Al Rees, and many other New York Times bestselling authors and experts. A singer, a television actress and comedian, and the subject of hundreds of featured newspaper articles, television, radio appearances internationally. Sufit has appeared doing stand-up comedy in nightclubs. Oh, you are so brave. And on national television, has appeared on television and film commercials internationally. Now, Sufit coaches professionals and entrepreneurs and business owners, authors and speakers, coaches, consultants, and CEOs to catapult their personal brands and themselves into a starring role. She coaches her clients to be seen, get heard, and get noticed. Once named Superachiever by the Canadian Lawyer magazine, Sufit is a Dean's List Law School graduate who practiced litigation law for 10 years before leaving law for the limelight. Her music CD, Under the Mediterranean Sun, has made top album lists all over North America and is played on radio internationally. Now, Sufit's unique story was the subject of a national television documentary, which aired on several networks across Canada. Sufit is in demand as a keynote speaker, radio and TV guest host, seminar leader, and mum. Although she points out that she is not currently taking any new clients for that last category. I hear you, Sufit.
You know, people don't always get that joke when they first hear it.
As a mum, that's probably in the similar sort of age group. I'm totally with you. Taking on plenty of roles as grandmother, though. That's where I like.
Oh no, not me yet. Not me.
Now, you've had such a varied career, you know, from a lawyer to the stand-up. But I can imagine being a lawyer and a stand-up comedian, although the audience may be a little bit different. Energy and the quick thinking would be quite the same.
Well, you're right. You're on stage. I mean, wherever you are. Although, you know, being a lawyer is not really like Perry Mason or I don't know if you get that where you are, but that was like 50 years ago anyway, but it's not all drama like you see in the legal shows. A lot of it is just like motions and things that aren't really that consequential. But, you know, the truth is you do perform. I just want to make one correction. It's under the Mediterranean sky, just in case anybody's not, rather than sun. Yeah, I didn't want to interrupt you, although that's it is on Sunbird Records, so you got the sun from somewhere, probably just moving, from the universe sent you that. Yeah. But yeah, there is a lot of similarity between, you know, you have to be a good communicator and you have to know how to influence. And that's what entrepreneurs need
and
to know as well.
I think the Canadian legal system is very similar to Australia, where you've got barristers in the court, and it's not like the American courts where it's all of that, as you said, the Perry Mason type of style. Am I right?
Yeah, we don't wear wigs. I don't know if you guys do, but we did wear robes. You know, the black, I used to call it the monkey suit, the black robes. So I'm glad to have escaped from that.
Knowing your personality from the conversations and having read your books and that, I can't imagine you being inhibited by that as well. I think we still wear wigs here. I'm not sure. I haven't been to court.
Yeah, we don't.
Now, there was something that popped out of this that I went, oh, my goodness, that's just so interesting. A documentary on your story. Wow, what an honor that would have been.
Yeah, well, there was actually a series where they featured, you know, interesting, I think it was women actually, who had interesting career changes and kind of a second career. So it was, it was a half an hour national documentary, and they interviewed one of my clients. They interviewed an actress who was in a commercial with me. They interviewed the co-producer of my CD. They interviewed the producer-director of the TV show I was on, you know, just to get different takes on me. And one of the things that they said was interesting, which is kind of relevant to what you just said now, one of the clients said that I'm this delicious mixture of right brain and left brain. Mm-hmm. You know, because you said it's kind of interesting that you couldn't see me in that law part, but I really am kind of both types. I am the detail, you know, logical, you know, person who was, you know, a good student, but then I'm also the creative, don't fence me in kind of type. And I thought that it was just sort of what people said about me, but I once did this online test and they actually tell you that they'll tell you what percentage you are of each, like to see which one you're more mm-hmm. of. And in the end, it ended up as close to 50-50 as statistically possible. It was like 49.7 times 50 point, like it was almost half what they said I was.
Yeah, well, that's it could have two things. It could be confusing sometimes because you're thinking, do I go that way or do I go that way? But it also lends a lot of opportunity for you to be in that creative space, but then see the results down the track, which was with what you do and working with the different clients, because reading that client list is such a diverse group that would actually help within that.
That's right. And also, you know, because a lot of our entrepreneurs are big idea people, A personality people, but then they find it hard to get it done. Mm-hmm. And then you say, okay, you got to find people to help you. Well, it's not always that easy to get people to, you know, help execute your vision. So it's nice to be able to actually sometimes do the things that I want to do, not just create them.
Yeah. And in that sort of space, get someone to trust that with your vision as well, someone who can see it in the first instance and then trust.
Yeah.
To help him.
I'm not very great at that. I'm more of the, you know, Barbara Streisand, there's a story about her. She was on Oprah and she was singing on the Oprah show. And later Oprah said to her, hey, I didn't know we had a white microphone on the set. And it turns out Barbara had come in ahead and had them paint the microphone white. Like that's a control, you know, she's a producer, director, star, singer, you know. I got a little bit of that going on. I want it the way I want it, right?
Yeah. Look, I'm hearing you. That works for me as well. Yeah. Yeah. So hence the
and I'm sure it resonates
morning at 4:30 in the morning going, I can't chat to you yet. No, I'm sorry. And when we started chatting, we were talking about, you know, working from home as well and having your home office, and you made comment that, you know, you lock your door.
Yes. Well, no, what it is not, I don't lock my door when I'm working, but Janine had made a comment about, oh, I think the house is empty, you know, we always like to empty out the husbands, the kids, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, mine not empty, but I have a lock on my door that was installed for the purpose of radio, a ton of radio shows, a ton of, you know, podcasts and things like that, or even just client sessions if the person's across the world. And so I have a reversible sign that I made probably 8-10 years ago that on one side, I don't have it in front of me because it's taped to the other side of my door on the door handle, so I can't tell you exactly what it says, but on one side it says recording, you know, please do not disturb, we'll open door when finished, and on the other side it says something like client meeting, quiet please, or I forget what it is. And so I turn it to whether I'm recording or I'm on a client session so that people know that they can't just barge in. I have it's not quite laminated, but it's got a plastic covering over it because it's been used thousands of times on the door.
But that is such a good idea. The other day I was interviewing on for a podcast and my husband, the door was closed and he just forgets, you know, they're a forgetful breed. And he came home and started making a coffee, you know, grinding up the coffee. Luckily the door's closed and it wasn't. I could hear it. So that I'm making a sign.
Yeah, for sure. make it reversible, like depending on, you know, recording the podcast and on the other side, you know, important phone call or whatever it is, but just so that they know not to barge in your room for sure.
Yeah, his comment was you were just chatting.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. They don't know, right?
That's what I do.
I chat for a living, my dear. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, tell me a little bit from your perspective, you know, what you do, what you believe, why you do what you do, you know, and how you've got into what you, from that lawyer into, you know, helping people step into the spotlight.
Sure. Well, so, you know, I was a lawyer for 10 years and I went to a live show at an amphitheater once and I saw this woman singing up there and I had always been singing since I was a kid, saw kind of on the side and in shows, you know, amateur. But when I saw her singing at this huge amphitheater, I said to the person I was with, why isn't it me up there? And a couple of years later, it was, you know, live amphitheater, over 1,000 people. They had to actually bring in more chairs. And so one day when I was a lawyer, one day I sort of said to myself, you know, that Peggy Lee song, is that all there is? That's all there is, my friend. So I kind of said to myself, you know, is that all there is? And I wanted to follow my dream. I think we should all follow our dreams. We have to be practical to some extent, especially when we have to support other people. But eventually, you know, I had 4 daughters in 4 years. And then after that, I said, you know what? I'm leaving law to follow my dream. So first I, you know, left to be a singer, actress, comedian. I put out a music CD, Under the Mediterranean Sky, and promoted it to make top album lists on radio stations around the world on the folk and world genres. And, then I performed, you know, live at music festivals and at, you know, different venues. I eventually dared myself to do a bit of stand-up comedy. I did that a little bit on TV as well, commercials. And then I decided I really should feed my daughters more than once a week. So I thought, okay, well, how can I use these things to actually be a little more practical? Because, you know, there's a singer in Canada, Jan Arden, and she said, you know, you can, in Canada, you can headline at Maple Leaf Gardens and still have to take the subway home. Maple Leaf Gardens is like Madison Square Gardens in the US. So it's basically that you can be a big star in Canada, but still, you know, there's no chauffeur waiting for you when you're done. You still have to take the subway home. So meaning that, you know, you don't get rich doing those kinds of things. So I became practical and I thought, you know what, I can coach other people because everybody started asking me, well, how'd you do that? How'd you get all the newspaper articles about you? How'd you get, you know, featured here and there? So I started coaching first creative types and then, you know, creative like in the music industry, and then very quickly became entrepreneurs. Actually didn't really do much in the music industry. They asked me about it, but the people who actually paid me and hired me were entrepreneurs, experts, professionals, accountants, financial advisors, you know, people like that. And I've been doing it for over 16 years now. And
Okay. You know, I've read this Step Into the Spotlight book, and that, it, you know, as I said earlier, it prompted me to get in touch with you about a year or so ago, because I just, and also with your LinkedIn group as well, that, you know, there's that group of people who are wanting more information about how do you step into the spotlight. And having written that particular book, that's helped you get more known in that entrepreneurial world and help more people as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, writing a book is a great way to, number one, crystallize your message, because, you know, for about 6 years, I was coaching one-on-one and people kept saying to me, you know, why don't you write a book? And, you know, I mean, I wanted to, but I didn't really get around to doing it. I was coaching entrepreneurs and professionals and experts, speakers one-on-one. And then when the book came out, it, number one, forced me to really figure out, well, what is my message, right? And I started to write another book called Follow That Dream, because that's what my coaching business was called at that time. But then I realized, you know what, that's kind of a broad message. And I don't think that that's the message that's really going to get me internationally noticed. So I kind of wrote that book and then decided it wasn't worthy of, you know, putting my name on as the, you know, book for me. I realized really what helped me was the fact that I know how to step into the spotlight. I know how to get noticed. I know how to get known. When I would go to the Chamber of Commerce networking meetings and get up to do my 30 seconds, I would have a lineup of people waiting to speak to me, you know, and other people that have been going for 5 years didn't. So people would ask me, well, why is that? And what are you doing differently? So I thought, okay, maybe I know something about this. So the book forced me to crystallize what is it that I have to say, people. And it was really to people. It was really about how you get noticed, how you get seen, how you get heard, how you get noticed, and how you get known. And so that's why I wrote the book. And also the beautiful thing about a book is it can be where I'm not. Okay, so you're in Brisbane, right, in Australia. You and I have never met in person. But there are people in Japan and Hong Kong and in Norway and in, you know, everywhere in the world, in Germany, who have read my book and know who I am, even though I may not know who they are. So it's a way of disseminating and broadcasting your message in a way that leverages my time, right? That I don't have to personally be there. And then the ones who, you know, read the book and they think I can help them will reach out. They'll join my LinkedIn group, which we're now almost at 7,000 entrepreneurs. It's spotlightgroup.biz if you want to check it out. They connect with me personally. They reply to, I have this 11 secrets thing that you know, people opt in for. And when they do, they can hit reply to any one of those and get in touch with, me personally. I know you'll probably ask me at the end, but is it all right if I just give them the
information?
Right. So if you go to spotlightsecrets.com, spotlightsecrets with an S at the end.com, you'll get some free tips on how to stand out in 30 seconds. But that, the good thing about that is if you hit reply to any one of them, you can communicate with me directly. So that's what the book has done. So it's brought people into my world in a much broader way. So at the beginning, my clients were just people at the, you know, in my local area that I met at a, you know, whether it was a BNI or a Chamber of Commerce or a Board of Trade, or if I spoke at a group, which I did a lot. Now my clients are international, and that's because of the book and because of, you know, radio shows and podcasts around the world as well, telesummits, things like that.
Yeah, and that's really important as well, because a lot of the listeners, you know, are doing exactly that. They're in their local BNI groups, their local chambers, their local women's groups meetings, and it's then getting noticed outside of that group and speaking. That's what I find for me personally. When I speak to groups, I then pick up clients because people then know that you know what you're talking about. But it's that getting that recognition on a much broader scale is what most of us, especially those of us that coach, that's what we're looking for, is that broader network, aren't we?
That's right. And you know, even if it ends up that a good proportion of your clients end up to be local and not international, still having heard of you on the international stage, right? Seeing that you are international, seeing that you lead a group, you've written a book, they heard you on the radio, makes them value you more even when you're local. So I remember once showing up to a session with an accountant in a local coffee shop near where I live. I met him at a Chamber of Commerce. He showed up to our meeting with the Toronto Star with a full page article, full page photo of me that came out that morning. So what happened was he showed up and he had already made the appointment before the article came out, but that validated his decision that he, you know, made the right decision. And so the same thing with the International. There's a group, Bare Naked Ladies, that's from Canada. And they used to play on, you know, Queen Street, a local downtown street, every Monday night. And, you know, they had tiny little audiences until they got famous outside of Canada, in the U.S. originally. Then they became a big deal in Canada. So it's like people, the hometown person, if you think of them as local, sometimes you think of them as less than. So it's really nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, not that there's any logic to that, but that's just how we think. So perception, mm-hmm. perceived value is just as important as actual value when it comes to attracting new clients. So if you are perceived to be internationally known, somehow people are more willing to pay you money and pay you more money.
Yeah, that's a really important factor, isn't it? Because, I mean, when I wrote my book, it's more of a fancy business card, but it does give you that credibility. But that's another level of credibility by being on that international stage as well. And it does reinforce.
It really is. It is. And, you know, the other thing is, like, again, you're in Australia. Mm. So how would you and I ever be doing this? So, like, I had a guy in New Zealand who wrote about me for something, and then he came back to me and came back to me and came back to me. He kept writing about me for different things and sending emails out to his audience, whatever. So it attracts clients in New Zealand. Like, where would I get clients in New Zealand otherwise? So it really does make sense to do this.
Yeah, it's very, very powerful. Now, you mentioned, you know, it's to stand out in 30 seconds. That's something that a lot of the groups that I go to, you know, you've got 60 seconds or to introduce yourself, but you said that, you know, you've got the 30 seconds and they had people lined up. How does that happen?
Well, you know, here's the thing. A lot of people say to me, you know, you can't get a new client in 30 seconds, right? It's all about long-term relationships, right? Well, people used to say that to me when I started going to the networking meetings, and they said, you just have to keep, you know, the Chamber of Commerce or whatever. They'll always tell you, and of course it's in their interest to tell you, but they'll always tell you, you have to keep coming back. You have to come every month. You have to keep coming back. It's all about long-term relationships. You can't get a new client in 30 seconds. That's what they said. 6 months later, they're putting me on stage because I would get about half my clients in just 30 seconds, you know, and I would joke that it's not just because of my Vogue supermodel looks, although there is that. It's because I knew from TV, you know, from the commercials that you could, right? People used to think it was impossible to run the 4-minute mile also, right? And only nobody told Roger Bannister, so he did it. And then after he did it, another 300 other people did it. Well, I'm here to tell you and your listeners, you can get a new client in just 30 seconds. But what you have to do is you have to craft a dynamic 30-second infomercial, not just a shopping list of information, not just, you know, a list of your benefits, but like a mini show that wows your audience while at the same time making them realize that they're actually thirsty for what you're selling, right? Now, obviously, not everybody needs what you have, not everybody wants what you have, but if you do it well, the ones who do need you will seek it out. So for me, the long-term relationship starts after they become a client. You know, I have clients who came to me 15 years ago and they come back to me now. But the thing is, if you can't tell your story in 30 seconds, you won't be able to tell it in 30 minutes either. Why? Because you probably really don't know what it is, right? You don't know the essence of what you're really selling.
And that's a factor, isn't it? That essence of what you're selling. Because normally, as you said, I listen to a lot of the 60 second pictures. The ones that I usually hear are 60 seconds, which, as you said, you only need 30 anyway. But they're a list of either features. Sometimes people do actually throw in some benefits as well. But I like the idea of that infomercial because that's definitely makes.
It's really a show. Yeah, it's really a show. You have to grab their attention. So I have a whole recipe box full of the ones. Like, I don't go to physical networking meetings almost ever anymore. But in the first 6-7 years, I went religiously. Like, I'd go to 20 in a month. And that's how I started my business from now. Right now, I do a lot more internationally, a lot more with online and from my LinkedIn group and from podcasts. But and because of the book, but in the beginning, that's what I did, and I still occasionally do it. And I get asked very often on telesummits to critique people live, and even at conferences to critique the 30 seconds because a lot of people, it's just a lot of information like, hi, I'm a real estate agent. Mortgage rates are low right now. So for all your real estate needs, please call me, go to my website. Here's my, you know, that's not going to grab anybody. If you're at a live event, people are just going to be thinking about what they're going to say. You know, they'll turn the channel on you. It's like they have a remote, right? Or they put you on mute. So what interrupts that? You know, there. I made an audio CD of about like 97 devices that work to interrupt that. But basically, some of the core ones are story. You know, tell a story. Tell a story of maybe when you were a kid and how you know you were really, really messy, and now you're a closet organizing, you know, expert or whatever. So that's kind of ironic. I have a client who she was adopted, and then her mom passed away, and it was just her and her dad. And the way what they did at supper time was they'd take out the can of Dinton stew or what, I forget the brand name, and a can opener, and they'd say, okay, whose turn is it to make supper? Meaning whose turn is it to open the can, right? That was she. Okay.
Yeah.
So this, she's now a good friend of mine. She was a client for years, Ruthie Bird, the lunch lady. Well, eventually, guess what Ruthie Bird does now? She's the lunch lady. She serves hot lunches to kids in school across the country. She has franchises. She walks around wearing an apron. Her, you know, she has kitchens all over. So that's a good story for her to tell. And when I met her and she became my client, I said, I want you to go to these networking meetings wearing that apron. I want you to tell that story. And I want you to pull out of one pocket a can opener. I want you to pull out of the other pocket the can. And I want you to physically show them and tell them that story. And that worked.
Yeah.
You know, I have another client too. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I said, that's really powerful, isn't it? It's,
yeah.
And it's funny how I just gone somewhere myself, gone, because every school report I had said, distracting in class and distracting others. And I'm thinking, well, that I was fine. I did well. I didn't find anything distracting.
Sophie talks too much.
That's it.
Yeah. I get paid to talk. So there.
Yeah, exactly the same. I get paid to teach people how to talk. So
yeah,
that is great. Yeah, that's really. I imagine the listeners are doing exactly the same thing now. Going, okay, what is my can opener story?
Exactly. I mean, and I'll just, can I share another one with you just so that they can see how you find these? So I had another client who came to me and she hesitated for about 2 years to come to me. And then finally, I spoke somewhere and somebody else saw her hesitating and said, Heidi, just pay her. And, you know, cause I would take prepaid, right? Mm-hmm. So just give her a check and be done with it. So she did. And when she came to me, I found out her story was that she had never told her story. She was a graphic designer and she would make like postcards and, you know, brochures and websites and book covers and things like that, right? And I said to her, you know, all of those things you mentioned, everybody and his cousin does that, you know, now with desktop publishing and all the, you know, everybody can do that. The one thing not everybody does is the books. So why don't you focus on the books? And then I interviewed her to find out, does she have any kind of a story? I found out she grew up in Switzerland on the top of, in the Swiss Alps, in a 600-year-old cabin. And she used to go down the valley to the local library and take out her favorite book. And I used to say, well, wouldn't it be great if we could say that your favorite book was Heidi? And she said, Sufit, it was. And the reason I said it would be great because her name was also Heidi. So anyway, we told this story and she was at one of these networking meetings where there were 10 women in each circle. She said 8 women out of the 10 in her circle asked for her card after that. And she changed her name to WeMakeBooks.ca. Instead of just, you know, HLA Creative or whatever it was before. So again, she told her story. People remember the story and they remember her now for one thing. That's the other mistake people make is they try to impress you with all the different things they can do. The result is the opposite. They remember none of it. So choose one that's distinct and focus on that one.
And that's a really important factor. You know, I was somewhere yesterday and someone that particularly got up and said, oh, I do two things. And one they're both totally different things. And so my first impression of that is, so which one do you do well? You know, what are you a specialist in and why do I pay you to do that?
Right. That's what that person did is like, you know, people always show up and they say, I'm wearing two hats. Like, I'm a rocket scientist and I do gift baskets on the side. I mean, that's kind of what that is, you know, and you're not going to really think much of the rocket scientist when he has to supplement his income with giving, you know, I'm a heart surgeon and I, you know, I bake bread on the, you know, if it's a hobby, that's one thing, you know, but, and it's interesting, but to do that, you have to do that to, you don't need to mention both at the same time.
No, no. So that would be one of the most common mistakes. And you mentioned, so tell a story. What else is another good tip while we're on this topic?
Well, you know, when you're telling stories, you want to use humor. You want to use drama.
What if you're not funny? Look, I love humor. I use it all the time. But what if you? It's difficult for some people to use humor.
Well, you know,
what if you're not funny?
What if
somebody thinks they're not funny?
Okay, what if you think you're not funny? Good question. Well, here's the thing: humor is not just jokes. I don't know. Did you guys get Seinfeld over there?
Yes, we
okay.
did.
Yes. All right. So Seinfeld episodes, if you analyze them, they didn't really tell jokes. What they did was they found funny situations that everyone could relate to. Like they would have a whole half hour episode about waiting in a Chinese food restaurant, you know, or they would have a whole episode about going to the airport to get the reservation of the car you reserved. And they say, I'm sorry, sir, there's no car for you. And he said, well, isn't that kind of the whole point of a reservation that I reserved a car, you know, and it's, it's the similarities that make people laugh. I wrote a song called Broccoli's on Sale at Dominion, which was about my Jewish mother, may she rest in peace. At the time, it was kind of like a love song to her because she would call me long distance on the phone and say, Sophie, you know, broccoli's on sale at Dominion. Don't buy Coca-Cola. I've got some. I'll give you. Or, you know, caffeine makes you nervous. Don't buy dishes. I bought them all half price, that kind of thing, right? So I made a funny song about that, and I used to perform it in festivals. Well, my bass player was Asian, and when I used to tell my punchline and my joke to the audience, he would interrupt me and say to the audience, he always got a bigger laugh than I did. So I'd tell my joke about my Jewish mother, and then he would say to the audience, Sophie, tell me about it. You know, like his Asian mother was exactly like my Jewish mother, you know, and I'd say, you know, Italians make some of the best Jewish mothers. Hey, Rick, go by, you know, finish your spaghetti. That's a Jewish mother, right? So it's right. The universal experience. There was a movie in the 80s called Punchline with Sally Field and Tom Hanks, where Tom Hanks plays a comedian and at a comedy club, and Sally Field is this housewife and she wants to be funny, but she's not funny. So she dips into the cookie jar, the family money, it's supposed to be for groceries, and she pulls out $500. She takes it. She pays this Tom Hanks character for, like, I think 25 jokes, something like that, right? She goes to the comedy club, tells the 25 jokes, and it bombs. Nobody laughs. And he explains to her later, well, that happened because it's not your story and it's not, you're not relating. And later she just got up and just started talking about the common experience. And then people started laughing. So humor is really more a way of being. It's a looseness, an openness. It's not necessarily just jokes with punchlines. So, you know, it's really embracing the way you naturally are. And usually when people are tired, or their defenses are down. I mean, I don't drink, but, you know, when people have a little bit to drink or whatever, usually they're a little bit looser and they're funnier. And the same thing if they're tired, it's because their inhibitions are down and they're naturally funny. But when they're trying to be professional, which I think is one of the big mistakes that entrepreneurs make, they're trying to be, I call it professionalitis, right? They're trying to be too professional. Sometimes they just come off as boring.
Yeah, and agree with that. And that's, sometimes that's shyness and nerves and everything that trying to come across as professional, isn't it? Rather than that they're trying to be really professional, they're just nervous, so they'll just stick to that one, what they know.
That's true. And you know, the shyness, I'm glad you brought that up, Janine, because, you know, I actually have a section in the Step Into the Spotlight book called What If I'm Shy? Because I read somewhere, and I think this may be true, that shyness actually sometimes could be a form of, I won't say selfishness, but maybe self-absorption. Because if you're so conscious of how you feel, it means you're not really thinking about how the other people feel, right? So, for example, if you had the cure for some terrible disease, would you really be shy about sharing it? or would you just want to go out there and share it, right? You wouldn't be thinking about yourself and do I sound good and do I look good? And, you know, if somebody was dying on the street and you had the way of saving that person, would you not do it because your hair isn't nice or your teeth are funny or you're shy? You know, you wouldn't think about that.
No, and that's exactly what I've actually had that same sort of opinion as well, but that it's that. And that's something when I'm coaching people on sales and selling is that when they're not promoting it, it's their own ego that's stopping them from doing that, as opposed to, you know, they'll say, I don't want to be pushy. And but every sentence starts with I.
Well, that's true too. Sometimes when my clients do their talks, I circle the number of times, you know, I write down the number of times they say I. But the other thing is about, you know, the people who are concerned about being pushy, I think it's a very valid concern, right? Because it's a big turnoff when people are pushy. So I would never suggest that anybody be pushy, but you can attract without chasing, right? You can share what you know without selling. And, you know, one way to do it is to speak or to teach or to, you know, rather than to try to push and to sell.
Yeah.
I think it's, yeah, it's very important to learn how to attract rather than to chase.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I say, like, telling isn't selling, you know, it's getting, being able to tell it in a way and using humor. I love using humor as well. And it's just those, one of the ladies, I was emceeing an event yesterday, and one of the ladies was showing vision boards, and she made comment about, you know, being in a new relationship, and so she had vision photos of, you know, cuddles and hugs and that, and I just sort of leaned over and said, well, you haven't been married 37 years yet. and you know, so that obviously got the laugh, and then somebody else said, oh, we still do that after 40 years, and I said, yeah, but you're not going for the laugh, Tony, and then that even created humor, you know. So yeah, I love that sort of that thing where it's just natural. It's not, because I can't remember jokes, so that I can't remember that at all, so that's where I fall down.
Right. And on this pushy thing too, and this combines with what you're saying about jokes as well, or humor, I found a way around that. Like, for example, let's say I'm at a networking meeting, which again I don't do so much anymore, but when I used to, when the book first came out, I go to the thing, instead of saying, you know, this is a really great book, so, and it will help you with this and this and this, so if you want to buy it, come up to me afterwards, right? Instead of that, I would get up, you know, say something, you know, about the book. And then at the end, I didn't say, come see me if you want to buy it or whatever. I would hold it up and I said to them, and I just said this randomly once and it stuck to the point that I said it over and over again. And actually now the audience sometimes says it with me or for me before I say it because they're used to me saying it. But the first time it was just randomly came out of my mouth. I held it up and I said, so I told them about the book and then I held it up. Step into the spotlight, $20 if I like you, $30 if I don't, right?
Yeah.
So people started laughing their heads off the first time I said it. They would come up to me afterwards with a wallet open and say, well, so do you like me, Sufit, right? So rather than make it about do they want to buy the book or not, it became about do they want to pay me $20 or am I going to charge them $30? Now, of course, I'm not going to charge them $30 because in Canada the price was like $23.05 anyway, including the tax. In the U.S. it was only $20. But the joke worked to the point that the mayor of the city came up to me after I made the joke and I said, for you, 40, you know, and he still bought the book in the end. I didn't charge him more than 20. But the point is that people now heard that joke. So now if I stand up, the minute I start to say 20, but the whole audience will say $20 if I like you, 30, you know, out loud. So it became a joke, a thing. But again, it took the focus off whether they want to buy the book or not. And we're just assuming they want to buy the book. We're just talking about what price they're going to pay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. That is fun, isn't it? It's a great.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it sells more books, you know?
Yeah, no, and definitely would. Now there's a lot of problems, and most of the audience listening are women, but there's a lot of problems that women face when they're trying to start a business. And a lot of the women that that listen are either just moved out of a full-time role and they sort of want to live their passion, or they're thinking about doing that and trying to figure out what they want to do. So just sort of quickly, what do you sort of see as their problem, their main problems, and then any suggestion as to how to overcome
Okay, sure. Well, we've covered two of them so far, which I'll just highlight again and then quickly move on. We've talked about not knowing how to describe what you do in 30 seconds. Like I said, if you can't say it in 30 seconds, you won't be able to say it in 30 minutes either. So I actually made a whole four-week program about what to say in 30 seconds, which you can see at 30seconds.biz. The other thing is not really understanding what you're really selling. So again, for example, somebody selling makeup, you know, Revlon, the owner, I think his name was Charles Revson. He said, in our bottles, we don't sell makeup, we sell hope. You know, they're selling hope in a bottle. That's what makeup is. He understood what he's really selling. Quaker Oats or Campbell Soup understand that they're selling comfort. Nike understands that they're selling just do it, inspiration. You don't need to pay $200 for running shoes. Or, you know, for Cougars or Nike or whatever. Seth Godin made this point in one of his books. People are really paying for the inspiration. So that's the second mistake. But the other mistakes are, and especially, well, I want to say, you asked me about women, but I think this is a problem for a lot of entrepreneurs, lack of confidence, right? Who am I to do this? Who am I to charge this? Women, and not just women, I mean, especially coaches, consultants, they don't charge enough because they lack confidence. And I would say, you know what, if you don't believe it, how are you going to get anybody else to believe it? So if you have to, you know, just do it anyway until you get some feedback, if you have to act as if, you know, if you have to, I hate that expression, fake it till you make it, but sometimes, because I don't really agree with anything being fake, I think you should be authentic. But on the other hand, when somebody's paying a coach, what they're really paying for is support. What they're really paying for is your confidence. That's all an entrepreneur is really selling, is confidence, right? Confidence that you can show them the way, confidence that you can do the heart surgery, confidence that you can, you know, help them in court. I mean, that's all. If they don't believe you can do it, then they're not going to pay you. And if you don't believe you can do it, they're not going to believe you can do it. So I have a trick. If my confidence is low, which happens to the best of us, it happens to all of us. And yes, guys, it does happen to me. And people are really shocked to hear that because I've been known since a little kid as being very confident. I'll just tell you a quick story and then I'll get back to my point. I was at a high school reunion many years ago. And I went up to this woman who's 5-6 years older than me, whose brother was in my class. I went up to her and I said, "You don't know me, but I went to school with your brother. Is he here tonight?" And she said, "I know who you are." She said, "When we moved to the neighborhood, you were 8 years old and you came up to us on this street that's adjacent to yours and you stuck out your hand and you said, 'Hi, I'm Sufit. Welcome to the neighborhood.'" I had no clue about that story until she told me. I mean, she was older than me. I didn't remember that story. So I guess maybe on some level I always had it, but I do lose confidence like everybody else. A little bit of rejection, we lose confidence. Things don't work out, we lose confidence. We wake up one morning and our hormones are this way or that way, we lose confidence, you know, whether it's menopause or younger or whatever it is, right? There's all sorts of things that make us lose confidence. So what I do is some activities are high confidence activities, like appearing on a podcast. You can't be interviewed like on a podcast like this and not appear confident because nobody's going to want to hear it, right? But if I wake up and I feel, you know, even at 5 a.m, you got to put on your confidence hat and do it, right? But if I feel really not confident, it's not so much I was not confident, but I woke up 5 years ago on January 1st, 2013, and I was sitting there. It was a holiday. It's New Year's Day. And I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to do this year? What am I going to do differently? I don't really feel all that confident to do some of the things I did a few years before. So I did a low confidence activity, something where I was protected from rejection. I was protected from putting myself on stage and into the spotlight. I started a group on LinkedIn. Okay. That group is now, you know, almost 7,000 members. It's called the Spotlight, Step in the Spotlight Group, which you can see at spotlightgroup.biz. Janine is a member. And very cool, some very famous, you know, members like Al Reese, who wrote Positioning, like Michael Gerber, who wrote The E-Myth, like, you know, a ton of very, you know, well-known New York Times bestselling author, and lots of entrepreneurs and consultants and coaches and speakers and authors. Anyway, I gathered together my ideal community. It was a low confidence activity because I could do it in my PJs and flip-flops sitting at my desk. I didn't have to go out in the cold Canadian winter. You know, I didn't have to put myself on stage. I didn't have to wear makeup. I didn't have to do any of those things, right? And it's turned into something that has brought me interviews. It's brought me podcasts, radio, clients, newspaper articles, tons of book sales. And it didn't take my full confidence the way it would take if I had to get on national TV and, you know, go to the makeup room at 5 a.m. So there are lower confidence activities. That's one of the ways around it. And okay, so that's one of the main problems that women face. There's a couple of other ones. One is lack of support. You know, many of us have supportive spouses, but many of us don't. And one of the, you know, I've coached a lot of women over the years. I have male clients as well. But one thing, a common theme I've noticed with women is the more successful the woman, sometimes she hires her husband to work in her business. It's happened to me for many, many clients where she got so successful, the husband left what he was doing to join her. And then the husband tried to backseat drive her and take away her confidence and even interfere with her being coached and whatever. Because who knows why? Maybe they want to be the one telling them what to do. I don't know what it is. So you have to really protect your confidence, because if you don't, there's nothing else. You have nothing to sell if you don't have confidence. So prove them wrong. There's that old cliche about Mexican crabs. You know, if you put a bunch of Mexican crabs in a bowl and one of them tries to get out to escape, all the other ones will pull it back down in the bowl. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's one of the cliches that you hear in the coaching.
I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah,
but
so
I
it's
can
one
visualize
of the ones that you hear
that
in the coaching industry. If you hang around long enough, you'll hear all the cliches. And I don't generally like to repeat them, but that one very often is true in the entrepreneurial world, because somebody else doesn't feel like you can charge that much. They'll tell you you're charging too much, right? If somebody doesn't feel you like you have the authority or the right to pontificate on the radio or on TV, they'll feel very free about telling you that, and you'll feel lack of support. So you just got to hang out with people who are supportive, or shut the door on those ones who aren't supportive. If they're family members, just close the door. And, you know, if you lose traction a couple of times, which happens, you know, especially at the beginning of your business, and let's say you lose confidence for a few months and you stop doing it, just try again and try again and try again. And once you start getting some results, you will have the confidence, and you will, and even without support. And one interesting story about, it's not exactly a support story, but it's, you know, a story I like to tell. I call the story Take the Seat. There was an author who was an exhibitor at a book conference, and nobody was coming to his table, and he was wondering why. So he goes in the other room and he sees that there is five really well-known authors on the stage and doing book signings, right? And one of the five seats was empty. He just went up and sat in the chair like he wasn't supposed to be there, right? And what happened was one of the people who worked there came up to him, and he was scared out of his mind. His heart was thumping, thinking, they're going to tell me, like, what are you doing here? Get off the stage. Actually, the person came up to him to ask if he wanted a glass of water. So he accepted the glass of water. He stayed there. He signed autographs, and he eventually sold his book for like $4 million to Simon & Schuster. It was the best. He sold, I think, only, I don't remember if it was hardcover or softcover. He sold one of the rights and kept the other one. It was a hit. Richard Paul Evans, I think, is his name. He wrote The Christmas Box. And anyway, so that's, you know, if sometimes you just have to go beyond your confidence zone and comfort zone and just dare yourself to do something really, really scary. And sometimes it will bomb and you'll feel, oh, that was stupid. I shouldn't have done that. And other times it will work. And people will come up to you the whole day. And I've been at conferences where I'm just an attendee in the audience, 1,000 people in the audience, and they'll open it up for questions. And sometimes I'll ask a question, which is really, you know, to promote my book or something, but I'll do it. Like Joan Rivers was on stage, Paul Abdul was on stage, and I wanted to attract attention. So I did it. A couple of times it didn't work. Most of the time it did work. And the whole rest of the conference, people were coming to me and saying, oh, that was so cool what you did. And where's your book? And so,
and you know, the thing with that, Sufit, is that what's the worst thing that can happen? You know, that's,
you'll be embarrassed. You'll be embarrassed a little bit.
That's right.
You know, you'll live.
Yeah, I know.
You'll live.
There's so many things happen around the world, and there's things in our daily lives that, you know, that are tragic, that sometimes, because that's what I do is coaching confidence, is that if you just do it, what is the worst thing that could happen? It just might, somebody might look at you funny for a day or for that,
and then they forget about it,
and that's it. You know, nobody's died, there's nothing tragic happened. Yeah, and as you said, you don't know what that conversation, where that's going to take you, and what opportunities, like that author, you just don't know what it's going to do. No.
That never would have happened if he hadn't taken this. I mean, you know, that's how it all started for him.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right about that. And you know, one more main misunderstanding or mistake that a lot of entrepreneurs make is thinking that passion is enough. You know, I'm passionate about this and I'm passionate about that. Like, who cares? You know, like, I mean, obviously your listeners, I'm pretty sure if you polled your listeners, Janine, and asked them after this podcast interview, you know, do you think Sufita is passionate? Yeah, they're going to say, are you kidding me? Of course. Right. But you never heard me say I'm passionate about this and I'm passionate about, I mean, it's just such a cliche. Nobody cares. And being passionate is not enough. It's just like, you know, love is not enough. Passion is part of what you need to propel you in the hard times, but you also have to learn how to do stuff. You know, you have to learn how to promote yourself. You have to learn how to market yourself. You have to learn how to say what you do in 30 seconds. You have to learn, you know, what you're really selling. You have to learn how to price it. You have to learn about branding and about everything else to do with promoting a business. Being passionate, you can sit on a street corner and be passionate all you want. It's not going to help you. And the other thing you have to understand is to be in the right place where your audience is pre-filtered. So I'll give you an example of this if I may. I was in Las Vegas speaking at a conference with coaches. Michael Gerber was also speaking and a bunch of other well-known coaches. And there were, you know, 100, 120 people in that room of coaches, and everybody was interested in the book. And that's a good place for my book, right? If I went on the streets of Las Vegas holding my book in my hand or setting up a little lemonade stand, right? There are probably thousands and thousands and thousands of entrepreneurs wandering the street together with weekends, you know, gamblers or whatever. But there's no way I would have sold any books probably doing that, maybe one or two, because it's not pre-sifted, it's not pre-sorted, it's not pre-filtered. So one of the mistakes that people make is thinking that their book is for everyone so that they want to go for a broad audience. Well, even if your book is for everyone, which it's not, or if your offering is for everyone, which it's really not, even if it really were, it's better to get in front of a pre-sifted, pre-sorted audience.
That's one of the things that I speak about all the time. And I had evidence of that recently where I totally blew a webinar. Just totally blew it. I didn't share my screen for an hour. And just everything that went wrong, completely went wrong. I had an 80% buy-in from the people who stayed because they were pre-filtered. They were interested in what I was saying, and it didn't matter that everything went wrong. Even though, you know, the lesson of what not to do was a good one, but it was a real lesson in exactly what you're saying. That audience was my audience. The ones that stayed, audience, and then to get an 80% buy-in for something like that was just massive.
That's remarkable. Good for you. And you know, on that point that you just made, Janine, you know, you need a permission-based list if you're going to be an entrepreneur. I recommend to everybody to build an email. I mean, although not everybody's doing email anymore, it's more stable than a Facebook list or a LinkedIn list, because tomorrow LinkedIn or Facebook can bar you or ban you. They, you know, they do it if they don't like your lipstick color or they don't like, you know, whatever they don't like. And so you want, I mean, nothing against those, you know, so, but any social media, it's their land. It's not your platform. It's their platform. So you want to build your own list on your own platform. But if they leave you, if they unsubscribe from your autoresponder, then, you know, at first most people would get upset. Why are they unsubscribing? Well, you just answered that, Janine. The ones who left aren't meant to stay there. The ones who stay, it just becomes a better, more responsive list. So don't cry when they leave. Be happy. I learned this from one of my mentors. Be happy when they leave, because they just gave you a better list, a list of people who chose to stay.
Yeah, I'm hearing you on that, because I was the same mindset going, why are they leaving? But now it is, okay, I'm surprised that person's not my audience, because I'll look at what they do and they're just not ready to.
Maybe they're not just ready at that moment. No. Even if they should be in your audience, they're not ready.
Absolutely. Now we're running short of time. I have to ask you, your spelling of your name is T-S-U-F-I-T. So you wouldn't naturally pronounce that Sufit. Where did that come from?
Sufit means hummingbird or sunbird in Hebrew. And that's actually, you know, when I was born and they were naming birds and they named a hummingbird at Sufit. And I was doing a radio show once. And just before we got on the show, the host was asking me, Sufit, tell me how to pronounce your name again. And I kept saying Sufit, feet, like feet, right? So she wrote it down. And then she goes, hello and welcome everybody to the show. Today we have award-winning author Sufit. Because she remembered the feet thing and she said foot. But anyway, it's Sufit. T like Tom, S like Sam, U, F like Frank, I, T like Tom.
Yeah, yeah. It's beautiful though, hummingbird. That's lovely.
Thank you.
You've mentioned a few times, but again, how can people get in touch with you?
Okay. First of all, the best way is to go to www.spotlightsecrets.com. Spotlight Secrets with an S at the end. .com and get my free tips. It's an email series on how to stand out and get noticed in just 30 seconds. And you can reply to any one of those and get me directly. Second is, you know, go check out the book, A Step into the Spotlight, by going to spotlightbook.com. That will take you directly to Amazon, where you can buy it either digital or a hard copy of the book. And thirdly, come join our LinkedIn group. You'll see me there and Janine and all these other people. And you can do that by going to spotlightgroup.biz, request to join. And if I like you, and maybe you mentioned Janine's name, that you were in the audience, I'll accept you.
Yeah, excellent. No, that's a lot of ways to get in touch with you. So that's spotlightsecrets with an S.com, or the book is spotlightbook.com, and the LinkedIn group is spotlightgroup.biz. Look, I've just enjoyed our time. It's gone so quickly, Sufit. It's just been wonderful. And I just have to tell the listeners, before we started, I went out and turned the air conditioning on and Sufit went and got a blanket.
Yeah, because I'm looking at snow falling here.
And I'm
got international business.
It is. It's fantastic. We're probably both sitting on, mine's 35 degrees Celsius and yours is probably 35 degrees Fahrenheit or less.
It's pretty cold here. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, and this is the wonderful thing about meeting people and working with people around the world, is that we can do that quite easily, especially in that coaching model, that you can have coaches from anywhere around the world. Look, I really appreciate your time this morning. It's been, well, this morning for me, this afternoon, Thursday afternoon for you, Friday morning for me. It's been wonderful, and you've given so much value to the listeners, and I've really enjoyed it. Thank you very much, Sufit.
Absolutely. My pleasure. And remember, guys, you know, if I can just share with you, in the words of one of my mentors, don't get it perfect, just get it going.
That's one of the most valuable things you can learn. So many people wait for it to be perfect before they start. So get it going. And once again, Sufit. So that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. And I'm Janine Vosper, your host, and I look forward to you joining me again next time. Bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.